Her hair is perfectly white, slicked back, and her eyebrows seem fixed in a constant state of shock, arched on her unwrinkled forehead. Everything about her is wrong, from her two full lips to the sharp, unnatural slope of her nose. Only her deep gray eyes look alive. The rest, I realize, is fake. Somehow she was able to heal or change herself into this monstrous thing in an attempt to look younger, prettier, better. "Sorry," I finally manage. "I came in and you weren't—" "I observed," she clips, already hating me. "You stand like a tree in a storm." She seizes my shoulders and pulls them back, forcing me to stand up straight. "My name is Bess Blanos, and I'm going to attempt to make you a lady. You're going to be a princess one day, and we can't have you acting like a savage, can we?" Savage. For a brief shining moment, I think about spitting in silly Lady Blanos's face. But what would that cost me? What would that accomplish? And it would only prove her right. Worst of all, I realize I need her. Her training will keep me from slipping, and most important, keep me alive. "No," a hollow shell of my voice answers. "We can't have that." Exactly 3.5 hours later, Blanos releases me from her clutches and back into Lucas's care. My back aches from the posture lessons about how to sit, stand, walk, and even sleep. On your back, arms at your sides, always still. But it's nothing compared to the mental exercise she put me through. She drilled the rules of court into my head, filling me with names, protocols, and etiquette. In the last few hours, I received a crash course in anything and everything I'm supposed to know. The hierarchy among the high houses is slowly coming into focus, but I'm sure I'll mess up something anyway. We only scratched the surface of protocol, but now I can go to the Queen's stupid function with at least some idea of how to act. The glass terrace is relatively close by, only a floor down and a hallway over, so I don't get much time to collect myself before facing Ilara and Evangeline again. This time, when I step through the doorway, I'm greeted by invigorating fresh air. I'm outside for the first time since I became Marina, but now with the wind in my lungs and the sun on my face, I feel more like Mare again. If I close my eyes, I can pretend none of this ever happened. But it did. The glass terrace is as ornate as Blanos' classroom was bare and lives up to its name. A glass canopy, supported by clear, artfully cut columns, stretches over us, refracting the sun into a million dancing colors to match the women milling about. It's beautiful in an artificial way, like everything else in this silver world. Before I have a chance to take a breath, a pair of girls steps in front of me. Their smiles are fake and cold, just like their eyes. Judging by the colors of their gowns, dark blue and red on one, solid black on the other, they belong to House Eral and House Haven. Silks and shadows, I remember, thinking back to Blanos' lessons on abilities. "Lady Marina," they say in unison, bowing stiffly. I do the same, inclining my head the way Lady Blanos showed me. "I'm Sonia of House Eral," the first says, tossing her head proudly. Her movements are lithe and cat-like. Silks are quick and quiet, perfectly balanced and agile. "And I'm Elaine of House Haven," the other adds, her voice barely a whisper. While the Eral girl is dark, with deeply tanned skin and black hair, Elaine is pale, with glossy red locks. The dancing sunlight speckles her skin in a perfect halo, making her look flawless. "Shadow, bender of light, we wanted to welcome you." But their pointed smiles and narrowed eyes don't look welcoming at all. "Thank you, that's very kind." I clear my throat, trying to sound normal, and the girls don't miss the action, exchanging glances. "You also participated in Queen's Trial," I say quickly, hoping to distract them from my terrible social graces. This only seems to incense them. Sonia crosses her arms, showing sharp nails the color of iron. "We did. Obviously, we were not so lucky as you are, Evangeline." Sorry, comes out before I can stop it. Marina would not apologize. I mean, you know I had no intention of...
Your intentions remain to be seen.
Sonia purrs, looking more like a cat with every passing second. When she turns, snapping her fingers in a way that makes her nails slice along each other, I flinch.
Grandmother, come meet Lady Marina.
Grandmother. I almost breathe a sigh of relief, expecting a kindly old woman to come waddling over and save me from these biting girls. But I'm sorely mistaken. Instead of a wizened crone, I'm met with a formidable woman, made of steel and shadow. Like Sonia, she has coffee-colored skin and black hair, though hers is shot with streaks of white. Despite her age, her brown eyes spark with life.
Lady Marina, this is my grandmother, Lady Ara, the head of House Iral, Sonia explains with a pointed smirk.
The older woman eyes me, and her gaze is worse than any camera, piercing straight through me.
Perhaps you know her as the Panther?
The Panther? I don't... But Sonia keeps talking, enjoying watching me squirm.
Many years ago, when the war slowed, intelligence agents became more important than soldiers. The Panther was the greatest of them all.
A spy. I'm standing in front of a spy. I force myself to smile, if only to try and hide my fear. Sweat breaks out on my palms, and I hope I don't have to shake any hands.
A pleasure to meet you, my lady.
Ara simply nods.
I knew your father, Marina, and your mother.
I miss them terribly, I reply, saying the words to placate her. But the Panther looks perplexed, tipping her head to the side. For a second, I can see thousands of secrets, hard won in the shadows of war, reflecting in her eyes.
You remember them?
She asks, prodding at my lie. My voice catches, but I have to keep talking, keep lying.
I don't, but I miss having parents.
Mom and Dad flash in my mind, but I push them away. My red past is the last thing I should think about.
I wish they were here to help me understand all this.
Hmm, she says, surveying me again. Her suspicion makes me want to leap off the balcony.
Your father had blue eyes, as did your mother.
And my eyes are brown.
I am different in many ways. Most I don't even understand yet, is all I can manage to say, hoping that explanation will be enough.
For once, the Queen's voice is my savior.
Shall we sit? Ladies,
she says, echoing over the crowd. It's enough to pull me away from Ara, Sonia, and the quiet Elaine, to a seat where I can breathe a little sigh to myself. Halfway to lessons, I begin to feel calm again. I addressed everyone properly and only spoke as much as I had to, as instructed. Evangeline talked enough for both of us, regaling the women with her undying love for Cal, and the honor she felt at being chosen. I thought the Queen's Trial girls would band together and kill her, but they didn't, to my annoyance. Only the Iral grandmother and Sonia seemed to even care that I was there, though they didn't push their interrogation any further. But they certainly will. When Maven appears around the corner, I'm so proud of my survival at lunch that I'm not even annoyed by his presence. In fact, I feel strangely relieved, and let a bit of my cold act drop. He grins, coming closer with a few long strides.
Still alive?
He asks. Compared to the Irals, he's like a friendly puppy. I can't help but smile. You should send Lady Iral back to the Lakelanders. She'll make them surrender in a week. He forces a hollow laugh.
She's a battle axe, that one. Can't seem to understand she's not in the war any longer. Did she question you at all?
More like interrogate. I think she's angry I beat out her granddaughter. Fear flickers in his eyes, and I understand it. If the Panther is sniffing around my trail...
She shouldn't bother you like that, he mutters.
I'll let my mother know, and she'll take care of it. As much as I don't want his help, I don't see any other way around it. A woman like Ara could easily find the cracks in my story, and then I'll be truly finished.
Thanks, that would be very helpful.
Maven's dress uniform is gone, replaced by casual clothes built for form and function. It calms me a little to see at least someone looking so informal. But I can't let anything about him soothe me. He's one of them. I can't forget that. "Are you done for the day?" he says, his face clearing to reveal an eager smile. "I could show you around if you want."
"No."
The word comes out quickly, and his smile fades. His frown unsettles me as much as his smile. "I have lessons next," I add, hoping to soften the blow. Why I care about his feelings, I don't exactly know.
"Your mother loves her schedules."
He nods, looking a little better. "She does indeed. Well, I won't keep you." He takes my hand, gently. The cold I felt on his skin before is gone, replaced with a delightful heat. Before I get a chance to pull away, he leaves me standing there alone. Lucas gives me a moment to collect myself before noting, "You know, we'd get there much faster if you actually moved."
"Shut up, Lucas."
13. My next instructor waits for me in a room cluttered from floor to ceiling with more books than I've ever seen, more books than I ever thought existed. They look old and completely priceless. Despite my aversion to school and books of any kind, I feel a pull to them. But the titles and pages are written in a language I don't understand, a jumble of symbols I could never hope to decipher. Just as intriguing as the books are the maps along the wall of the kingdom in other lands, old and new. Framed against the far wall, behind a pane of glass, is a vast, colorful map pieced together from separate sheets of paper. It's at least twice as tall as me and dominates the room. Faded and ripped, it's a tangled knot of red lines and blue coasts, green forests and yellow cities. This is the old world, the before world, with old names and old borders we no longer have any use for.
"It's strange to look at the world as it once was," the instructor says, appearing out of the book stacks.
His yellow robes, stained and faded by age, make him look like a human piece of paper.
"Can you find where we are?"
The sheer size of the map makes me gulp, but like everything else, I'm sure this is a test.
"I can try."
Norda is the northeast, the Stilts is on the capital river, and the river goes to the sea. After a minute of pained searching, I finally find the river and the inlet near my village.
"There,"
I say, pointing just north, where I suppose Summerton might be. He nods, happy to know I'm not a total fool.
"Do you recognize anything else?"
But like the books, the map is written in the unknown language. I can't read it.
"I didn't ask if you could read it,"
he replies, still pleasant.
"Besides, words can lie. See beyond them."
With a shrug, I force myself to look again. I was never a good student in school, and this man is going to find that out soon enough. But to my surprise, I like this game. Searching the map, looking for features I recognize. "That might be Harbor Bay," I finally murmur, circling the area around a hooked cape.
"Correct," he says, his face folding into a smile.
The wrinkles around his eyes deepen with the action, showing his age.
"This is Delphi now," he adds, pointing to a city farther south. "And Archeon is here."
He puts his finger over the capital river, a few miles north of what looks like the largest city on the map, in the entire country of the before world. The ruins. I've heard the name in whispers between the older kids and from my brother's shade. The Ash City, the wreckage, he called it. A tremor runs down my spine at the thought of such a place, still covered in smoke and shadow from a war more than 1,000 years ago. Will this world ever be like that if our war doesn't end? The instructor stands back to let me think. He has a very strange idea of teaching. It will probably end with a 4-hour game of me staring at a wall. But suddenly, I'm very aware of the buzz in this room, or lack thereof. This entire day I've felt the electrical weight of cameras, so much that I've stopped noticing. Until now, when I don't feel it at all. It's gone. I can feel the lights still pulsing with electricity, but no cameras, no eyes. Ilara cannot see me here. Why isn't anyone watching us? He only blinks at me.
So, there is a difference,
he mutters. What that means, I don't know, and it infuriates me. Why?
Mare, I'm here to teach you your histories, to teach you how to be silver, and how to be, useful,
he says, his expression souring. I stare at him, confused. Cold fear bleeds through me. My name is Marina. But he only waves a hand, brushing aside my feeble declaration.
I'm also going to try to understand exactly how you came to be and how your abilities work.
My abilities came to be because I'm silver. My parents' abilities mixed. My father was an Oblivion and my mother Storm. I stutter through the explanation Ilara fed me, trying to make him understand. I'm a silver, sir. To my horror, he shakes his head.
No, you are not, Mare Barrow, and you must never forget it.
He knows. I'm finished. It's all over. I should beg, plead for him to keep my secret, but the words stick in my throat. The end is coming, and I can't even open my mouth to stop it.
There's no need for that, he continues, noting my fear. I have no plans of alerting anyone to your heritage.
The relief I feel is short-lived, shifting into another kind of fear. Why? What do you want from me?
I am, above all things, a curious man. And when you entered Queen's Trial, a red servant, and ran out some long-lost silver lady, I have to say I was quite curious.
Is that why there aren't any cameras in here? I bristle, backing away from him. My fists clench, and I wish the lightning would come to protect me from this man. So there's no record of you examining me?
There are no cameras in here because I have the power to turn them off.
Hope sparks in me, like light in absolute darkness. What is your power? I ask shakily. Maybe he's like me.
Mare, when a silver says power, they mean might, strength. Ability, on the other hand, refers to all the silly little things we can do.
Silly little things? Like break a man in two, or drown him in the town square.
I mean that my sister was queen once, and that still counts for something around here.
Lady Blanos didn't teach me that. He chuckles to himself.
That's because Lady Blanos is teaching you nonsense. I will never do that.
So, if the queen was your sister, then you're
Julian Jacos at your service.
He sweeps into a comically low bow.
Head of House Jacos, heir to nothing more than a few old books.
My sister was the late Queen Corianne, and Prince Tiberius VII, Cal, as we all call him, is my nephew. Now that he says it, I can see the resemblance. Cal's coloring is his father's, but the easy expression, the warmth behind his eyes, those must come from his mother. So you're not going to turn me into some science experiment for the queen? I ask, still wary. Instead of looking offended, Julian laughs aloud.
My dear, the queen would like nothing more than for you to disappear. Discovering what you are, helping you understand it, is the last thing she wants.
But you're going to do it anyway? Something flashes in his eyes, something like anger.
The queen's reach is not so long as she wants you to think. I want to know what you are, and I'm sure you do, too.
As afraid as I was a moment ago, that's how intrigued I am now. I do.
That's what I thought, he says, smiling at me over a stack of books. I'm sorry to say I must also do what was asked, to prepare you for the day you step forward.
My face falls, remembering what Cal explained in the throne room. You are their champion, a silver raised red. They want to use me to stop a rebellion, somehow.
Yes, my dear brother-in-law and his queen believe you can do so, if used appropriately.
Bitterness drips from his every word. It's a stupid idea and impossible. I won't be able to do anything, and then... My voice trails away. Then they'll kill me.
Julian follows my train of thought.
You're wrong, Mare. You don't understand the power you have now, how much you could control.
He clasps his hands behind his back, oddly tight.
The Scarlet Guard are too drastic for most, too much too fast. But you are the controlled change, the kind people can trust. You are the slow burn that will quench a revolution with a few speeches and smiles. You can speak to the Reds, tell them how noble, how benevolent, how right the king and his silvers are. You can talk your people back into their chains. Even the silvers who question the king, the ones who have doubts, can be convinced by you. And the world will stay the same.
To my surprise, Julian seems disheartened by this. Without the buzzing cameras, I forget myself and my face curls into a sneer.
And you don't want that? You're a silver, you should hate the Scarlet Guard, and me.
Thinking all silvers are evil is just as wrong as thinking all reds are inferior, he says, his voice grave. What my people are doing to you and yours is wrong to the deepest levels of humanity. Oppressing you, trapping you in an endless cycle of poverty and death, just because we think you are different from us? That is not right. And as any student of history can tell you, it will end poorly.
But we are different. One day in this world taught me that. We're not equal.
Julian stoops, his eyes boring into mine.
I'm looking at proof you are wrong.
You're looking at a freak, Julian.
Will you let me prove you wrong, Mare?
What good will it do? Nothing will change.
Julian sighs. Exasperated, he runs a hand through his thinning chestnut hair.
For hundreds of years, the Silvers have walked the earth as living gods, and the Reds have been slaves at their feet until you. If that isn't change, I don't know what is.
He can help me survive. Better yet, he might even help me live.
So, what do we do?
My days take on a rhythm, always the same schedule. Protocol in the morning, lessons in the afternoon, while Ilara parades me at lunches and dinners in between. The Panther and Sonia still seem wary of me, but haven't said anything since the luncheon. Maven's help seems to have worked, as much as I hate to admit it. At the next large gathering, this time in the Queen's personal dining hall, the Arals ignore me completely. Despite my protocol lessons, luncheon is still overwhelming as I try to remember what I've been taught. Osanos, nymphs, blue and green. Well, green wardens, green and gold. Larilan, oblivions, orange and red. Rhombos and Tyros and Nornus and Iral and many more. How anyone keeps track of this, I'll never know. As usual, I'm seated next to Evangeline. I'm painfully aware of the many metal utensils on the table, all lethal weapons in Evangeline's cruel hand. Every time she lifts her knife to cut her food, my body tenses, waiting for the blow. Ilara knows what I'm thinking, as usual, but carries on through her meal with a smile. That might be worse than Evangeline's torture, to know she takes pleasure in watching our silent war.
And how do you like the Hall of the Sun, Lady Titanos? The girl across from me asks.
Atara, House Viper, green and black, the Animos who killed the doves.
I assume it's no comparison to the village you lived in before.
She says the word village like a curse, and I don't miss her smirk. The other women laugh with her, a few whispering in scandalized voices. It takes me a minute to respond as I try to keep my blood from boiling.
The hall and Summerton are very different from what I'm used to, I force out.
Obviously, another woman says, leaning forward to join the conversation. Oh, well, judging by her green and gold tunic. I took a tour of the Capital Valley once, and I must say, the red villages are simply deplorable. They don't even have proper roads. We can barely feed ourselves, let alone pave streets. My jaw tightens until I think my teeth might shatter. I try to smile, but instead end up grimacing as the other women voice their agreement. And the Reds, well, I suppose it's the best they can do with what they have, the well continues, wrinkling her nose at the thought. They're suited to such lives. It's not our fault they were born to serve, a brown-robed Rombo says airily, as if she's talking about the weather or the food. It's simply nature. Anger curls through me, but one glance from the queen tells me I cannot act on it. Instead, I must do my duty. I must lie. It is, indeed, I hear myself say. Under the table, my hands clench, and I think my heart might be breaking. All over the table, the women listen attentively. Many smile, more nod as I reassert their terrible beliefs about my people. Their faces make me want to scream. Of course, I continue, unable to stop myself. Being forced to live such lives with no respite, no reprieve, and no escape would make servants of anyone. The few smiles fade, twitching into bewilderment. Lady Titanos is to have the best tutors and best help to make sure she adjusts properly, Ilara says quickly, cutting me off. She's already begun with Lady Blanos. The women mutter appreciatively, while the girls exchange eye rolls. It's enough time to recover, to reclaim the self-control I need to survive the meal. What does His Royal Highness intend to do about the rebels? A woman asks, her gruff voice sending a shock of silence over lunch, drawing focus away from me. Every eye at the table turns to the speaker. A woman in military uniform. A few other ladies wear uniforms as well, but hers shines with the most medals and ribbons. The ugly scar down her freckled face says she may actually have earned them. Here, in a palace, it's easy to forget there's a war going on, but the haunted look in her eye says she will not, she cannot, forget. Queen Ilara puts down her spoon with practiced grace, and an equally practiced smile. Colonel Macanthos, I would hardly call them rebels. And that's the only attack they've claimed, the colonel fires back, cutting off the queen. What about the explosion in Harbor Bay, or the airfield in Delphi, for that matter? 3 air jets destroyed, and 2 more stolen from one of our own bases. My eyes widen, and I can't help but gasp with a few ladies. More attacks? But while the others look frightened, hands pressed to their mouths, I have to fight the urge to smile. Farley has been busy. Are you an engineer, Colonel? Ilara's voice is sharp, cold, and final. She doesn't give Macanthos a chance to shake her head. Then you wouldn't understand how a gas leak in the bay was at fault for the explosion. And remind me, do you command aerial troops? Oh, no, I'm so sorry. Your specialty lies with ground forces. The airfield incident was a training exercise overseen by Lord General Larys himself. He has personally assured His Highness of the utmost safety of the Delphi base. In a fair fight, Macanthos could probably tear Ilara apart with her bare hands. But instead, Ilara tore the colonel apart with nothing but words, and she's not even finished. Julian's words echo in my head. Words can lie. Their goal is to harm innocent civilians, silver and red, to incite fear and hysteria. They are small, contained, and cowardly, hiding from my husband's justice. To call every mishap and misunderstanding in this kingdom the work of such evil only furthers their efforts to terrorize the rest of us. Do not give these monsters the satisfaction of that. A few women at the table clap and nod, agreeing with the queen's sweeping lie. Evangeline joins in, and the action quickly spreads, until only the colonel and I remain silent. I can tell she doesn't believe anything the queen says, but there's no way to call the queen a liar. Not here, not in her arena. As much as I want to stay still, I know I can't. I'm Marina, not mayor, and I have to support my queen and her wretched words. My hands come together, clapping for Ilara's lie, as the scolded colonel bows her head. Even though I'm constantly surrounded by servants and silvers, loneliness sets in. I don't see Cal much, what with his busy schedule of training, and more training. He even gets to leave the hall, going to address troops at a nearby base, or accompanying his father on state business. I suppose I could talk to Maven, with his blue eyes and half-smirk, but I'm still wary of him. Luckily, we're never truly left alone. It's a silly court tradition to keep noble boys and girls from being tempted, as Lady Blanos put it, but I doubt it'll ever apply to me. Truthfully, half the time I forget I'm supposed to marry him one day. The idea of Maven being my husband doesn't seem real. We're not even friends, let alone partners. As nice as he is, my instincts tell me not to turn my back on Alara's son, that he's hiding something. What that might be, I don't know. Julian's teachings make it all bearable. The education I once dreaded is now a bright spot in my sea of darkness. Without the cameras in Alara's eyes, we can spend our time discovering what I really am. But the going is slow, frustrating us both. I think I know what your problem is, Julian says at the end of my first week. I'm standing a few yards away, arms outstretched, looking like the usual fool. There's a strange electrical contraption at my feet, occasionally spitting sparks. Julian wants me to harness it, to use it. But once again, I failed to produce the lightning that got me into this mess in the first place. Maybe I have to be in mortal danger, I huff. Should we ask for Lucas's gun? Usually Julian laughs at my jokes, but right now he's too busy thinking. You're like a child, he finally says. I wrinkle my nose at the insult, but he continues anyway. This is how children are at first when they can't control themselves. Their abilities present in times of stress or fear until they learn to harness those emotions and use them to their advantage. There's a trigger, and you need to find yours. I remember how I felt in the spiral garden, falling to what I thought was my doom. But it wasn't fear running through my veins as I collided with the lightning shield. It was peace. It was knowing that my end had come and accepting there was nothing I could do to stop it. It was letting go. It's worth a try, at least, Julian prods. With a groan, I face the wall again. Julian lined it with some stone bookshelves, all empty, of course, so I have something to aim at. Out of the corner of my eye, I see him back away, watching me all the time. Let go. Let yourself go, the voice in my head whispers. My eyes slide closed as I focus, letting my thoughts fall away so that my mind can reach out, feeling for the electricity it craves to touch. The ripple of energy, alive beneath my skin, moves over me again until it sings in every muscle and nerve. That's usually where it stops, just on the edge of feeling. But not this time. Instead of trying to hold on, to push myself into this force, I let go. And I fall into what I can't explain, into a sensation that is everything and nothing, light and dark, hot and cold, alive and dead. Soon the power is the only thing in my head, blotting out all my ghosts and memories. Even Julian and the books cease to exist. My mind is clear, a black void humming with force. Now when I push at the sensation, it doesn't disappear, and it moves within me, from my eyes to the tips of my fingers. To my left, Julian gasps aloud. My eyes open to see purple-white sparks, jumping from the contraption to my fingers, like electricity between wires. For once, Julian has nothing to say, and neither do I. I don't want to move, afraid that any small change might make the lightning disappear. But it doesn't fade. It remains, jumping and twisting in my hand like a kitten with a ball of yarn.
It seems just as harmless, but I remember what I almost did to Evangeline. This power can destroy if I let it.
Try to move it, Julian breathes, watching me with wide, excited eyes.
Something tells me this lightning will obey my wishes. It's part of me, a piece of my soul, alive in the world. My fist clenches into a tight ball, and the sparks react to my straining muscles, becoming larger and brighter and faster. They eat away at the sleeve of my shirt, burning through the fabric in seconds. Like a child throwing a ball, I whip my arm toward the stone shelves, releasing my fist at the last moment. The lightning flies through the air in a circle of bright sparks, colliding with the bookshelves. The resulting boom makes me scream and fall back into a stack of books. As I tumble to the ground, heart racing in my chest, the solid stone bookshelf collapses on itself in a cloud of thick dust. Sparks flash over the rubble for a moment before disappearing, leaving nothing but ruins behind.
"Sorry about the shelf," I say from beneath a pile of fallen books. My sleeve still smokes in a ruin of thread, but it's nothing compared to the buzz in my hand. My nerves sing, tingling with power. That felt good. Julian's shadow moves through the cloudy air, a laugh resounding deep in his chest as he examines my handiwork. His white grin glows through the dust.
"We're going to need a bigger classroom." He's not wrong. We're forced to find newer and bigger rooms to practice in each day, until we finally find a spot in the underground levels a week later. Here the walls are metal and concrete, stronger than the decorative stone and wood up the upper floors. My aim is dismal, to say the least, and Julian is very careful to steer clear of my practicing, but it becomes easier and easier for me to call up the lightning. Julian takes notes the whole time, jotting down everything from my heartbeat to the heat of a recently electrified cup. Each new note brings another puzzled but happy smile to his face, though he doesn't tell me why. I doubt I'd understand, even if he did.
"Fascinating," he murmurs, reading something off another metal contraption I can't name.
He says it measures electrical energy, but how, I don't know. I brush my hands together, watching them power down, as Julian calls it. My sleeves remain intact this time, thanks to my new clothing. It's fireproof fabric, like what Cal and Maven wear, though I suppose mine should be called shockproof.
"What's fascinating?"
He hesitates, like he doesn't want to tell me, like he shouldn't tell me, but finally shrugs.
"Before you powered up and fried that poor statue," he gestures to the smoking pile of rubble that was once a bust of some king, "I measured the amount of electricity in this room. From the lights, the wiring, that sort of thing. And now I just measured you.
And
you gave off twice what I recorded before," he says proudly, but I don't see why it matters at all.
With a quick dip, he switches off the spark box, as I've taken to calling it. I can feel the electricity in it die away.
"Try again."
Huffing, I focus again. After a moment of concentration, my sparks return, just as strong as before. But this time, they come from within me. Julian's grin splits his face from ear to ear.
So this confirms my suspicions.
Sometimes I forget Julian is a scholar and a scientist, but he's always quick to remind me.
"You produced electrical energy."
Now I'm really confused.
"Right, that's my ability, Julian."
"No, I thought your ability was the power to manipulate, not create," he says, his voice dropping gravely.
"No one can create, Mare."
"But that doesn't make sense. The nymphs manipulate water that already exists. They can't use what isn't there."
"Well, what about Cal? Maven? I don't see many raging infernos around for them to play with."
Julian smiles, shaking his head.
"You've seen their bracelets, yes?
They always wear them.
The bracelets make sparks, little tiny flames for the boys to control. Without something to start the fire,
they are powerless. All elementals are the same, manipulating metal or water or plant life that already exists. They're only as strong as their surroundings. Not like you, Mayor. Not like me. I'm not like anyone. So, what does this mean? I'm not quite sure. You are something else entirely. Not red, not silver. Something else, something more. Something different. I expected Julian's tests to bring me closer to some kind of answer, but instead they only raise more questions. What am I, Julian? What's wrong with me? Suddenly it's very difficult to breathe and my eyes swim. I have to blink back hot tears, trying to hide them from Julian. It's all catching up to me, I think. Lessons, protocol, this place where I can't trust anyone, where I'm not even myself. It's suffocating. I want to scream, but I know I can't. There's nothing wrong with being different, I hear Julian say, but the words are just an echo. My own thoughts, memories of home, of Gisa and Killorn, drown him out. Mayor? He takes a step toward me, his face a picture of kindness, but he keeps me at an arm's length. Not for my sake, his own, to protect himself from me. With a gasp, I realize the sparks have returned, running up my forearms now, threatening to engulf me in a raging bright storm. Mayor, focus on me, Mayor. Control it. He speaks softly, calmly, but with steady force. He even looks frightened of me. Control, Mayor! But I can't control anything. Not my future, not my thoughts, not even this ability that is the root of all my troubles. There is one thing I can still control, though. For now, at least. My feet. Like the wretched coward that I am, I run. The halls are empty as I tear through them, but the invisible weight of 1,000 cameras presses down on me. I don't have much time until Lucas, or worse, the sentinels find me. I just need to breathe. I just need to see the sky above me, not glass. I'm standing on the balcony, a full 10 seconds before I realize it's raining, washing me clean of my boiling anger. The sparks are gone, replaced by fierce, ugly tears that track down my face. Thunder rumbles somewhere far off, and the air is warm, but the humid temperature is gone. The heat has broken, and summer will soon be over. Time is passing. My life is moving on, no matter how much I want it to stay the same. When a strong hand closes around my arm, I almost scream. 2 sentinels stand over me, their eyes dark behind their masks. Both are twice my size and heartless, trying to drag me back into my prison. My lady, one of them growls, but it doesn't sound respectful at all. Let me go! The command is weak, almost a whisper. I gulp down air like I'm drowning. Just give me a few minutes, please. But I'm not their master. They don't answer to me. No one does. You heard my bride, another voice says. His words are firm and hard. The voice of royalty. Maven, let her go. When the prince steps out onto the balcony, I can't help but feel a rush of relief. The sentinels straighten at his presence, both inclining their heads in his direction. The one holding me speaks up. We must keep the Lady Titanos to her schedule, he says, but he loosens his grip. It's orders, sir. Then you have new orders, Maven replies, his voice like ice. I will accompany Marina back to her lessons. Very well, sir, the sentinels say in unison, unable to refuse a prince. When they stomp away, their flaming cloaks dripping rain, I sigh out loud. I didn't realize it before, but my hands are shaking, and I have to clench my fists to hide the tremors. But Maven is nothing if not polite, and pretends not to notice. We have working showers inside, you know. My hands wipe at my eyes, though my tears are long lost in the rain, leaving behind only an embarrassingly runny nose and some black makeup. Thankfully, my silver powder holds. It's made of stronger stuff than I am. First rain of the season, I manage, forcing myself to sound normal. Had to see it for myself.
Right, he says, moving to stand next to me. I turn my head, hoping to hide my face for just a little bit longer.
I understand, you know.
Do you, Prince? Do you understand what it's like to be taken away from everything you love? Forced to be something else? To lie every minute of every day for the rest of your life? To know there's something wrong with you?
I don't have the strength to deal with his knowing smiles. You can stop pretending to know anything about me or my feelings.
His expression sours at my tone, his mouth twisting into a grimace.
You think I don't know how difficult it is to be here with these people?
He casts a glance over his shoulder, like he's worried someone might hear. But there's no one listening except the rain and thunder.
I can't say what I want, do what I want. With my mother around, I can barely even think what I want. And my brother.
What about your brother? The words stick in his mouth. He doesn't want to say them, but he feels them all the same.
He's strong, he's talented, he's powerful, and I'm his shadow. The shadow of the flame.
Slowly, he exhales, and I realize the air around us is strangely hot.
Sorry, he adds,
taking a step away, letting the air cool. Before my eyes, he melts back into the silver prince more suited to banquets and dress uniforms.
I shouldn't have said that.
It's fine, I murmur. It's nice to hear that I'm not completely alone and feeling out of place.
That's something you should know about us Silvers. We're always alone. In here and here, he says, pointing between his head and his heart. It keeps you strong.
Lightning cracks overhead, illuminating his blue eyes until they seem to glow.
That's just stupid, I tell him, and he chuckles darkly.
You better hide that heart of yours, Lady Titanos. It won't lead you anywhere you want to go. The words make me shiver. Finally, I remember the rain and the mess I must look like.
I should get back to my lessons, I mutter, fully intending to leave him on the balcony.
Instead, he catches my arm. I think I can help you with your problem. I quirk an eyebrow at him.
What problem?
You don't seem like the type of girl to weep at the drop of a hat. You're homesick. He holds up a hand before I can protest.
I can fix that.
14. Security patrols my hallway in roving pairs, but with Maven on my arm, they don't stop me. Even though it's night, long past when I should be in bed, no one says a word. No one crosses a prince. Where he's leading now, I don't know, but he promised to get me there. Home. He's quiet but determined, fighting a small smile. I can't help but beam at him. Maybe he isn't so bad. But he stops us long before I assume he should. We never even leave the residence floors. Here we are, he says, and raps on the door. It swings open after a moment, revealing Cal. His appearance takes me back a step. His chest is bare, while the rest of his strange armor hangs off him. Metal plates woven into fabric, some of it dented. I don't miss the purple bruise above his heart, or the faint stubble on his cheeks. It's the first time I've seen him in over a week, and I've caught him at a bad moment, obviously. He doesn't notice me at first. He's focused on removing more of his armor. It makes me gulp.
Got the board set, maybe, he begins, but stops when he looks up to see me standing with his brother. Mayor, how can I, what can I do for you?
He stumbles over his words, at a loss for once.
I'm not exactly sure, I reply, looking from him to Maven.
My betrothed only smirks, raising an eyebrow a little. For being the good son, my brother has his own discretions, he says, and his air is surprisingly playful. Even Cal grins a little, rolling his eyes. You wanted to go home, Mayor, and I've found you someone who's been there before. After a second of confusion, I realize what Maven is saying and how stupid I am for not realizing it before. Cal can get me out of the palace. Cal was at the tavern.
He got himself out of here so he could do the same for me.
Maven, Cal says through gritted teeth, his grin gone. You know she can't. It's not a good idea.
It's my turn to speak up, to take what I want.
Liar.
He looks at me with his burning eyes, his stare going right through me. I hope he can see my determination, my desperation, my need.
We've taken everything from her brother,
Maven murmurs, drawing close. Surely we can give her this? And then, slowly, reluctantly, Cal nods and waves me into his room. Dizzy with excitement, I hurry inside, almost hopping from foot to foot. I'm going home. Maven lingers at the door, his smile fading a little when I leave his side.
You're not coming.
It isn't a question. He shakes his head. You'll have enough to worry about without me tagging along. I don't have to be a genius to see the truth in his words, but just because he isn't coming doesn't mean I will forget what he's done for me already. Without thinking, I throw my arms around Maven. He doesn't respond for a second, but slowly lets an arm drop around my shoulders. When I pull back, a silver blush paints his cheeks. I can feel my own blood run hot beneath my skin, pounding in my ears.
Don't be too long, he says, tearing his eyes away from me to look at Cal.
Cal barely smirks. You act like I've never done this before. The brothers share a chuckle, laughing just for each other, like I've seen my brothers do 1,000 times before. When the door shuts behind Maven, leaving me with Cal, I can't help but feel a little less animosity toward the princes. Cal's room is twice the size of mine, but so cluttered it seems smaller. Armor and uniforms and combat suits fill the alcoves along the walls, all hanging from what I assume are models of Cal's body. They tower over me like faceless ghosts, staring with invisible eyes. Most of the armor is light, steel plate, and thick fabric, but a few are heavy duty, meant for battle, not training. One even has a helmet of shining metal, with a tinted glass faceplate. An insignia glitters on the sleeve, sewn into the dark gray material. The flaming black crown and silver wings. What it means, what the uniforms are for, what Cal has done in them, I don't want to think about. Like Julian, Cal has stacks of books piled all over, spilling out in little rivers of ink and paper. They aren't as old as Julian's, though. Most look newly bound, typed out and reprinted on plastic-lined sheets to preserve the words. And all are written in common, the language of Norta, the Lakelands, and Piedmont. While Cal disappears into his closet, stripping off the rest of his armor as he goes, I sneak a glance at his books. These are strange, full of maps, diagrams, and charts, guides to the terrible art of warfare. Each one is more violent than the last, detailing military movements from recent years and even before. Great victories, bloody defeats, weapons and maneuvers, it's enough to make my head spin. Cal's notes inside them are worse, outlining the tactics he favors, which ones are worth the cost of life. In the pictures, tiny squares represent soldiers, but I see my brothers and Killorn and everyone like them. Beyond the books, by the window, there's a little table and two chairs. On the tabletop, a game board lies ready, pieces already in place. I don't recognize it, but I know it was meant for Maven. They must meet nightly, to play and laugh, as brothers do.
We won't have very long to visit, Cal calls out, making me jump.
I glance at the closet, catching sight of his tall, muscled back as he pulls a shirt on. There are more bruises and scars as well, even though I'm sure he has access to an army of healers if he wants them. For some reason, he's chosen to keep the scars.
As long as I get to see my family, I answer back, maneuvering myself away, so I don't keep staring at him.
Cal emerges, this time fully dressed in plain clothes. After a moment, I realize it's the same thing he wore the night I met him. I can't believe I didn't see him for what he was from the beginning. A wolf in sheep's clothing.
And now I'm the sheep pretending to be a wolf.
We leave the residence floors quickly, moving downward. Eventually, Cal turns a corner, directing us into a wide concrete room. Just in here. It looks like some kind of storage facility, filled with rows of strange shapes covered in canvas sheets. Some are big, some are small, but all are hidden. It's a dead end, I protest. There's no way out but to go the way we came in.
Yes, Mayor, I brought you to a dead end, he sighs, walking down a particular row.
The sheets ripple as he passes, and I glimpse shining metal underneath.
More armor? I poke at one of the shapes.
I was going to say, you should probably get some more. Didn't seem like you had enough upstairs. Actually, you might want to put some on. My brothers are pretty huge and like to beat on people. Though, judging by Cal's book collection and muscles, he can hold his own. Not to mention the whole controlling fire thing.
He just shakes his head.
I think I'll be fine without it.
Besides, I look like a security officer in that stuff. We don't want your family getting the wrong idea, do we?
What idea do we want them to get? I don't think I'm exactly allowed to introduce you properly.
I work with you. We got a leave pass for the night.
Simple, he says, shrugging. Lying comes so easily to these people.
So, why would you come with me? What's the story there?
With a sly grin, Cal gestures to the canvas shape next to him.
I'm your ride.
He throws back the sheet, revealing a gleaming contraption of metal and black paint. Two treaded wheels, mirrored chrome, lights, a long leather seat. It's a transport like I've never seen.
It's a cycle, Cal says, running a hand over the silver handlebars like a proud father.
He knows and loves every inch of the metal beast.
Fast, agile, and it can go where transports can't.
It looks like a death trap, I finally say, unable to mask my trepidation. Laughing, he pulls a helmet from the back of the seat. I sure hope he doesn't expect me to wear it, much less ride this thing.
It's what Father said, and Colonel Macanthos. They won't mass produce for armies yet, but I'll win them over. Haven't crashed one since I perfected the wheels.
You built it? I say, incredulous, but he shrugs like it's nothing.
Wow. Just wait until you ride it, he says, holding out the helmet to me.
As if on cue, the far wall jolts, its metal mechanisms groaning somewhere, and begins to slide away, revealing the dark night beyond. Laughing, I take a step back from the death machine.
That's not happening.
But Cal just smirks and swings one leg over the cycle, sinking down into the seat. The engine rumbles to life beneath him, purring and growling with energy. I can sense the battery deep in the machine, powering it on. It begs to be let loose, to consume the long road between here and home.
Home.
It's perfectly safe, I promise, he shouts over the engine. The headlight blazes on, illuminating the dark night beyond. Cal's red gold eyes meet mine, and he stretches out a hand.
Mayor?
Despite the horrible sinking in my stomach, I slide the helmet onto my head. I've never ridden in an airship, but I know this must feel like flying, like freedom. Cal's cycle eats up the familiar road in elegant, arcing curves. He's a good driver, I'll give him that. The old road is full of bumps and holes, but he dodges each one with ease, even as my heart rises in my throat. Only when we coast to a stop half a mile from town do I realize I'm holding on to him so tightly he has to pry me off. I feel suddenly cold without his warmth, but I push the thought away.
Fun, right?
He says, powering down the cycle. My legs and back are already sore from the strange small seat, but he hops off with an extra spring in his step. With some difficulty, I slide off as well. My knees wobble a bit, more from the pounding heartbeat still thrumming in my ears, but I think I'm okay. It won't be my first choice in transportation.
Remind me to take you up in an air jet sometime. You'll stick to cycles after that,
he replies as he rolls the cycle off the road,
into the cover of the woods. After throwing a few leafy branches over it, he stands back to admire his handiwork.